You are listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Looking for someplace cold in this heat? Well, just a few blocks from WBUR studios, it can get so cold that it almost freezes atoms. Boston Globe reporter Aaron Pressman has seen it firsthand and lived to tell about it, and he is here for Tech Talk. Aaron, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
So listen, I was joking about the live to tell about it part because we're, of course, talking about a lab, and you previewed this last time you were here. You teased the story that you were going to write coming out about your visit to an Amazon lab, and then when you wrote it, I have to read this opening line to the story because it totally grabbed me. Quote, "One of the coldest spots in the universe pops into existence periodically in a one-story office building near Harvard Stadium," end quote. So now I'm staring at you. I have to hear more. Go.
Well, quantum computing is this idea that the tiny subatomic and atomic particles that act in totally different ways than traditional physics, that are very hard to predict, that we've known about for about 100 years, could be used to create a totally new kind of computer. And the computer would be able to do calculations that are much more complex than traditional computers we have today. So if we wanted to model weather systems and things that are so far beyond what we can model accurately today, maybe we could invent a computer that worked on quantum physics principles.
Okay, so listen, I'm very secure in my intellectual capacity, and I am unembarrassed to say I understand none of that. And so we'll dive into that a little, but let's go back to, if that's what we're talking about, quantum computers, where does cold come in? Why do we need some cold place?
So quantum computers work by using tiny little particles, subatomic particles like a photon, you know, Okay. Photons in light, or electrons, the part that go around the atom. And tiny particles are very subject to interference by other particles hitting them or bouncing around.
Kind of bing, bing.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, if you think about like a bunch of ping pong balls running into each other, that's sort of what's happening in the quantum realm. If you want to do quantum computing, you want your particle to do, you know, you set it in a certain way. You want it to stay that way. Hey, don't move around. Don't get hit by another ping pong ball. So if you think about it, as temperature goes down to absolute zero, which is more than 400 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, all atomic movement would cease at absolute zero. So if you go, they lower the temperatures down to like a few millionths of a degree above absolute zero. So no other particles. The ping pong balls are all frozen. No particles are bouncing into your particle, which you're using to for your computer.
So literally, all matter except a few of these subatomic particles is like, I'm like frozen in time.
Yes,
and
exactly.
In space.
You're frozen.
Okay. So first, just to put this in perspective for people, Kyrie Thompson pulled this for me. The surface of Pluto, which we used to think was the coldest planet, is about what? Negative 387 degrees Fahrenheit. This is colder.
Yes.
And we've created this, not we, Amazon has created this in a lab just a few blocks from here.
Yes.
And we think this is one of, when it happens, when they do this thing, it is one of the coldest places in the universe.
Yeah, space, outer space, just pure outer space is 3 or 4 degrees above absolute zero.
How do we know that, by the way? How do we know how cold it is in space? Do we know how cold it is in space?
I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't either. But we think
that can be the next show.
Okay. All right. So, why do we want to do this? I mean, you talked about modeling weather, et cetera. And again, there's a lot I really don't understand how one uses subatomic particles to create computers. And I don't think we can do that in the minutes that we have here on the show. But why do we want to take this next step in quantum computing, Aaron?
Well, one way we can break down the problem to talk about it a little more coherently is what they're doing at Amazon in Boston is they're not creating a quantum computer. There are a lot of places doing that, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, a lot of people doing that, some startups in Boston. What they want to do is quantum networking, which is once you have a quantum computer and you want to send your information from Boston to California or you want to back up your data, you can't use any normal technique that we use for computers today to send data over long distances. If you try to send quantum particles over 100 miles, they start to lose their status. They lose the data that they have encoded.
They can't travel.
So they can't travel more than 100 miles. So what they're trying to do in Brighton at this lab is figure out, is there some way we can send quantum particles without losing their data over a really long distance? And it starts to involve sort of crazy, creative material science that came out of Harvard University. That's another reason why we're in Brighton doing this, about how you might be able to transfer a quantum particle a long distance and retain all its information.
So one of the first times I spoke with you here in Studio 2, Aaron, we talked about sort of the ways that Boston's tech history kind of lost or has lost some ground to Silicon Valley, right? You've talked about lots of different places are developing quantum computers. I'm curious with this kind of innovation, and you're saying, you know, Harvard has some of the science here, material sciences, that makes this interesting. Is there a frontier here where there could be a new sort of center of gravity? I know I'm mixing science or metaphors here, but a new center of gravity here in the tech and computing world, Aaron?
Absolutely. And I think quantum computing, which is still, you know, was first theorized 40 years ago, but we still don't have really working quantum computers yet. This is a next frontier of something that when they finally get it, which they say is 10 years away, we'll see, it will be huge. It will be industry, you know, with spillover, with huge amounts of startups and stuff. So Boston has a great start in this from Harvard. Northeastern is opening a $10 million quantum computing center. And also, obviously, MIT has huge research related to quantum computers. So Boston is going to be, assuming we can get this quantum computing thing cracked, is going to be one of the places for that.
It's Tech Talk with the Boston Globe's Aaron Pressman here on Radio Boston. Before we leave this subject, indulge me, why does an Amazon or a Google want to be in the world of quantum computing?
Well, I think one thing is that obviously—
Or networking. You said networking, too.
Networking is what they're doing here. But Amazon's working on all different kinds of quantum computing. One reason, obviously, is that this is going to be a huge business someday if they crack it. There will be so many uses for these quantum computers, and they will be so helpful for lots of kinds of communications and solving different kinds of problems. So it could be a big business, and these are companies that already have a lot of computing businesses and computing resources so they can work on it and do it. So I think there's sort of, you know, just a general capitalist motive. But the other thing is, quantum computing threatens to undo all the kinds of communications and computing that we do today.
For example,
the codes that we use today, when you do online banking,
okay,
or when you send a message and it's encrypted, will be erased. It will be easy to, in theory, easy to crack all those codes using quantum computing. So if you're a major computer vendor or a cloud computing vendor, your whole business could be at risk from quantum computing. Everyone will have to move their data and their messages to quantum-related technologies to avoid just being able to be cracked open like an egg.
So does this mean, by the way, if you're saying this is an industry that's maybe 10 years from being an industry, right? Does this mean that young people who are thinking about wanting to be in computing 10 years from now need to be studying things like physics, maybe in a way that people who wanted to be in computing 10 years ago were studying something else?
I think it depends if you want to go into, you know, if you want to go into designing computers and making computers and building new chips, you definitely would want to be up on all the latest in quantum physics. On the other hand, if you want to do software, you want to build a startup that, you know, uses computing as sort of its base, I don't think, you know, the people at Easy Cater, for example, need to know how the physics of a computer work. They're building a business on top of computing.
And I see what you did there. You brought Easy Cater because you know that's where we're going next. And we are here with Aaron Pressman, Boston Globe reporter for Tech Talk. Easy Cater is the next thing that we're going to talk about, right? Because and listen, I want to set the context of why we're going to talk about Easy Cater. Yes, there is a move by the CEO, and I'll let you explain that in a second. But it's because it is happening in the context of some disruptions in the tech industry that you've been following quite closely. So tell us what the news is with this local tech company, Easy Cater.
So Easy Cater, they started in 2007. They're right in downtown Boston. And their idea was to create a marketplace to connect restaurants and caterers with workplaces. And it's been very successful. I think they're going to go public pretty soon. One of the co-founders and the CEO for all this time is Stefania Mallett. She is a leading light in the Boston tech scene. She's an MIT grad. She has done a bazillion startups. Really impressive woman. who has such good values. The culture of Easy Cater is all about kindness and collaboration and interacting. So she's built an amazing company there. And, you know, she's in her mid-60s, and I think she's decided it's time to do some other things.
So it's notable, A, whenever somebody who's a co-founder in this area with a business that is prominent in this area steps down. But there's also this larger picture of a number of CEOs and company founders leaving their posts after the pandemic, especially as we've been hearing about this concept that there's this tech bubble that has burst over this past year. And you've been covering a lot of shifts in the industry related to that. Lots of layoffs, for example, and other shifts. So are these things related? And what do we mean by this burst in the tech bubble over the last year?
I think sometimes being a founder is a lot of fun and energizing, and you certainly see it when you talk to people like Stefania. But over COVID, for example, Easy Cater, when businesses closed up, lost 85% of their sales overnight. She had to lay off half of her company almost overnight. And all of the companies around Boston, TripAdvisor is another one, Akamai is another one, Wayfair is another one, where the struggle of the tech bubble ending and the pandemic coming through, I think, was extremely trying if you were a leader at one of these companies, and obviously took a toll. And maybe, you know, people, now that things are kind of coming out of it a little bit, at least in the tech industry, maybe it's a time where people say, like, oh my gosh, I need to do something different.
Aaron, it makes me think of all the mayors that chose not to run for reelection or to step down after getting their cities and towns through the pandemic.
Yeah, I think it's very similar. What's interesting to me is, I don't know about the mayors and whether what they'll go on to, but a lot of these people, Stefania Mallett is an incredibly creative person. I asked her, like, are you going to start another company? And she said, you know, maybe. So I want to see what these people will do next. Or maybe, you know, they've certainly earned the right. Maybe they just want to sit on a beach and read a good book.
So the other thing that caught my attention, Aaron, when you talked about this, is that Easy Cater is close to going public. A, interesting to have somebody step down just before their company may go public. And B, in, you know, our last minute or so, a company that recently, not that long ago, lost 85% of its business and had to lay off a huge chunk of its workforce, now getting ready to go public.
Stefania and her team figured out something really smart, which was they had built the whole company for white collar workers, or, you know, like the Boston Globe and WBUR bring in food for them. But even during the pandemic, there's tons of work sites where people need food, like construction sites, hospitals, that still had people on site during the pandemic. And so they shifted very quickly and they figured out, like, hey, there's even more business here than we thought of. And now white collar offices are reopening too. So their sales went up 87% last year after they doubled in 2021. So it was a very smart move. She has put the company on the track to go public once the stock market is a little better.
And do you think you'll see that from some of these other companies that have suffered, contracted, and are starting to crawl their way back out?
Some of them have recovered. I think in other areas like online commerce and, you know, Wayfair is already public, but we may never get back to where we were for some of those companies.
Interesting. All right. Aaron Pressman is a technology reporter at the Boston Globe. We do Tech Talk. It's great to have you in. You're going to go back to that lab again, aren't you?
Oh, for
you?
Sure.
Yeah,
for
you're
sure.
Just curious about it. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.